are heavy hitters. I wouldn't have wanted to say how high or how low I ranked among them individually, but collectively, down there at the field level, we were the Army's top cops. No question about it. Weird, I said. And it was weird. To shuffle that many specific individuals around on the same day took some kind of will and planning. And to do it during just cause took some kind of an urgent motive. The room seemed to go quiet, like I was straining to hear the other shoe fall. I'm going over to the Delta station, I said. I drove myself in a Humvee because I didn't want to walk. I didn't know if the asshole Willard was off the post yet, and I didn't want to cross his path again. The sentry let me into the old prison, and I went straight to the adjutant's office. He was still at his desk, looking a little more tired than when I'd seen him in the early morning. It was a training accident, I said. He nodded.
So I heard.
What kind of training was he doing, I asked.
Night maneuvers, the guy said.
Alone?
Escape and evasion, then.
On post?
Okay, he was jogging, burning off the holiday calories, whatever.
I need this to sound kosher, I said. My name's gonna be on the report. The captain nodded.
Then forget the jogging. I don't think Carbone was a runner. He's more of a gym rat. A lot of mar.
A lot of who are? He looked straight at me.
Delta guys, he said.
Did he have a specialization?
They're all generalists. They're all good at everything.
Not radio? Not medic?
They all do radio, and they're all medics. It's a safeguard. If they're captured individually, they can claim to be the company medic. Might save them from a bullet, and they can demonstrate the expertise if they're tested.
Any medical training take place at night? The captain shook his head.
Not specifically.
Could he have been out testing comms gear?
He could have been out road testing a vehicle, the captain said. He was good with mechanical things. I guess as much as anyone, he looked after the unit's trucks. That was probably as close as he got to a specialization.
Okay, I said. Maybe he blew a tire and his truck fell off the jack and crushed his head.
Works for me, the captain said. Uneven terrain, maybe a soft spot under the jack, the whole thing would be unstable. Works for me, the captain said again.
I'll say my guys towed the truck back.
Okay. What kind of truck was it? Any kind you like.
You see O around? I said.
He's away for the holidays.
Who is he?
You won't know him. Try me. Colonel Brubaker, the captain said.
David Brubaker? I said. I know him. Which was partially true. I knew him by reputation. He was a real hairy-ass Special Forces evangelist. According to him, the rest of us could fold our tents and go home, and the whole world could hide behind his hand-picked units. Oh, maybe some helicopter battalions could stay in harness to ferry his people around. Maybe a single Pentagon office could stay open to procure the weapons he wanted. When will he be back, I said.
Sometime tomorrow.
Did you call him? The captain shook his head.
He won't want to be involved, and he won't want to talk to you. But I'll get him to reissue some operational safety procedures as soon as we find out what kind of an accident it was.
Crushed by a truck, I said. That's what it was. That should make him happy. Vehicular safety is a shorter section than weapons safety.
In what?
In the field manual. The captain smiled.
Brubaker doesn't use the field manual, he said.
I want to see Carbone's quarters, I said.
Why?
Because I need to sanitize them. If I'm going to sign off on a truck accident, I don't want any loose ends around. Carbone had bunked the same way as his unit as a whole, on his own in one of the old cells. It was a 6x8 space made of painted concrete, and it had its own sink and toilet. It had a standard army cot and a footlocker and a shelf on the wall as long as the bed. All in all, it was pretty good accommodations for a sergeant. There were plenty around the world who would have traded in the blink of an eye. Summer had had police tape stuck across the doorway. I pulled it down and balled it up and put it in my pocket. Stepped inside the room. Special Forces Detachment D is very different from the rest of the Army in its approach to discipline and uniformity. Relationships between the ranks are very casual. Nobody even remembers how to salute. Tidiness is not prized. Uniform is not compulsory. If a guy feels comfortable in a previous issue fatigue jacket that he's had for years, he wears it. If he likes New Balance running shoes better than GI combat boots, he wears them. If the Army buys 400,000 Beretta sidearms, but the Delta guy likes SIGs better, he uses a SIG. So Carbone had no closet full of clean and pressed uniforms. There were no serried ranks of undershirts, crisp and laundered, folded ready for use. There were no gleaming boots under his bed. His clothing was all piled on the first three quarters of the long shelf above his cot. There wasn't much of it. It was all basically olive green, but apart from that, it wasn't stuff that a current quartermaster would recognize. There were some old pieces of the Army's original extended cold-weather clothing system. There were some faded pieces of standard BDUs. Nothing was marked with unit or regimental insignia. There was a green bandana. There were some old green T-shirts, washed so many times they were nearly transparent. There was a neatly rolled Alice harness next to the T-shirts. Alice stands for All-Purpose Lightweight Carrying Equipment, which is what the Army calls a nylon belt that you hang things from. The final quarter of the shelf's length held a collection of books and a small color photograph in a brass frame. The photograph was of an older woman that looked a little like Carbone himself. His mother, without a doubt. I remembered his tattoo, sliced across by the K-bar. An eagle, holding a scroll with mother on it. I remembered my mother, shooing us away into the tiny elevator, after we'd hugged her goodbye. I moved on to Carbone's books. There were five paperbacks and one tall, thin hardcover. I ran my finger along the paperbacks. I didn't recognize any of the titles or any of the authors. They all had cracked concave spines and yellow-edged pages. They all seemed to be adventure stories involving prototype airplanes or lost submarines. The lone hardcover was a souvenir publication from a Rolling Stones concert tour. Judging by the style of the print on the spine, it was about 10 years old. I lifted his mattress up off the cot springs and checked under it. Nothing there. I checked the toilet tank and under the sink. Nothing doing. I moved on to the footlocker. First thing I saw after opening it was a brown leather jacket folded across the top. Underneath the jacket were two white button-down shirts and two pairs of blue jeans. The cotton items were worn and soft, and the jacket was neither cheap nor expensive. Together, they made up a soldier's typical Saturday night outfit. Shit, shave, and shower, throw on the civilian duds, pile into someone's car, hit a couple of bars. Have some fun. Underneath the jeans was a wallet. It was small and made out of brown leather that almost matched the jacket. Like the clothes above it, it was set up for a typical Saturday night's requirements. There were $43 in cash in it, sufficient for enough rounds of beers to get the fun started. There was a military ID card and a North Carolina driver's license in it, in case the fun concluded inside an MP Jeep or a civilian black and white. There was an unopened condom, in case the fun got serious. There was a photograph of a girl behind a plastic window. Maybe a sister, maybe a cousin, maybe a friend. Maybe nobody. Camouflage, for sure. Underneath the wallet was a shoebox half full of 6x4 prints. They were all amateur snapshots of groups of soldiers. Carbone himself was in some of them. Small groups of men were standing and posing like chorus lines, arms around each other's shoulders. Some shots were under a blazing sun, and the men were shirtless, wearing beanie hats, squinting and smiling. Some were in jungles. Some were in wrecked and snowy streets. All showed the same tight camaraderie. Comrades in arms, off duty, still alive, and happy about it. There was nothing else in Carbone's 6x8 cell. Nothing significant, nothing out of the ordinary, nothing explanatory. Nothing that revealed his history, his nature, his passions, or his interests. He'd lived his life in secret, buttoned down, like his Saturday night shirts. I walked back to my Humvee, turned a corner, and came face to face with the young sergeant with the beard and the tan. He was in my way, and he wasn't about to move.
"You made a fool out of me," he said.
"Did I?"
"About Carbone, letting me talk the way I did. Company clerk just showed us some interesting paperwork."
"So?"
"So we're thinking now."
"Don't tire yourselves out," I said.
"You think this is funny? You won't think it's funny if we find out it was you."
"It wasn't."
"Says you."
I nodded. "Says me. Now get out of my way."
"Or?"
"Or I'll kick your ass." He stepped up close.
"Think you could kick my ass?"
I didn't move. "You're wondering whether I kicked Carbone's ass, and he was probably twice the soldier you are."
"You won't even see it coming," he said.
I said nothing.
"Believe me," he said.
I looked away. I believed him. If Delta put a hit on me, I wouldn't see it coming. That was for sure. Weeks from now, or months from now, or years from now, I would walk into a dark alley somewhere, and a shadow would step out, and a K-bar would slip between my ribs, and my neck would snap with a loud crack that would echo off the bricks around me, and that'd be the end of it.
"You've got a week,"
the guy said. "To do what?"
"To show us it wasn't you."
I said nothing.
"Your choice," the guy said. "Show us, or make those 7 days count. Make sure you cover all your lifetime ambitions. Don't start a long book."
I drove the Humvee back to my office, left it parked right outside my door. The sergeant with the baby son had gone. The small dark corporal, who I thought was from Louisiana, was there in her place. The coffee pot was cold and empty. There were two message slips on my desk. The first was, "Major Franz called, please call him back." The second said, "Detective Clark returned your call." I dialed Franz in California first.
"Reacher," he said, "I asked about the armored agenda."
"And?"
"There wasn't one. That's their story and they're sticking to it."
"But?"
"We both know that's bullshit. There's always an agenda."
"So did you get anywhere?"
"Not really," he said. "But I can prove an incoming secure fax from Germany late on December 30th, and I can prove significant Xeroxing activity on the 31st in the afternoon. And then there was some shredding and burning on New Year's Day after the Kramer news broke. I spoke to the incinerator guy. One burn bag full of paper shreds, maybe enough for about 60 sheets.
"How secure is their secure fax line?"
"How secure do you want it to be?"
"Extremely secure. Because the only way I can make sense out of this is if the agenda was really secret. I mean really secret. And if it was really secret, would they have put it on paper in the first place?"
"They're 12 Corps, Reacher. They've been living on the front line for 40 years. All they've got is secrets."
"How many people were scheduled to attend the conference?"
"I spoke to the mess. There were 15 bag lunches booked."
60 pages, 15 people. That's a 4-page agenda, then."
"Looks that way. But they went up in smoke."
"Not the original that was faxed from Germany," I said.
"Well, they'll have burned that one over there."
"No. My guess is Kramer was hand-carrying it when he died."
"So where is it now?"
"Nobody knows. It got away."
"Is it worth chasing?"
"Nobody knows," I said again. "Except the guy who wrote it, and he's dead. And Vaseline Coomer. They must have seen it. They probably helped with it."
"Vaseline Coomer went back to Germany this morning. First flight out of Dulles. The staffers here were talking about it."
"You ever met this new guy, Willard?" I asked him.
"No."
"Try not to. He's an asshole."
"Thanks for the warning. What did we do to deserve him?"
I have no idea, I said. We hung up and I dialed the Virginia number and asked for Detective Clark. I got put on hold. Then I heard a click and a second's worth of squad room sounds and a voice came on the line. Clark, it said. Reacher, I said. U.S. Army down at Fort Byrd. Did you want me?
You wanted me, as I recall, Clark said. You wanted a progress report? But there isn't any progress. We're looking at a brick wall here. We're looking for help, actually.
Nothing I can do. It's your case.
I wish it wasn't, he said.
What do you got?
Lots of nothing. The perp was in and out without maybe touching a thing. Gloves, obviously. There was a light frost on the ground. We got some residual grit from the driveway and the path, but we're not even close to a footprint.
Neighbors see anything?
Most of them were out, or drunk. It was New Year's Eve. I've had people up and down the street canvassing, but nothing's jumping out at me. There were some cars around, but there would be anyway on New Year's Eve with folks heading back and forth to parties.
Any tire tracks on the driveway?
None that mean anything.
I said nothing.
The victim was killed with a crowbar, Clark said. Probably the same tool as was used on the door.
I figured that, I said.
After the attack, the perp wiped it on the rug and then washed it clean in the kitchen sink. We found stuff in the pipe. No prints on the faucet. Gloves again.
I said nothing.